trouble trying to come up with a good title for this talk. What we've just been told about is a scenario that's been billed as an alternative to compactification, but we don't yet have a good name that is analogous to compactification for this procedure of reducing a higher dimensional theory to a lower dimensional theory via confining it to a brain. So here, well, various possibilities in terms of how to describe it. Brain reduction, gravitational localization, those seem a bit long. The Randall syndrome scenario is not quite generic because there are brain intersection scenarios and so on. So the best I could come up with was brainification, which is still a little clunky, but if you can think of a better word, that would be great. So I'll be describing some physics in the context of brainification, and Tony, you'll have to explain the joke to me later. Okay. I'll talk to John. Okay, so I'll be discussing, well, first give a very quick review. Of course, Raman just gave a very nice review of the basic scenario. Then I'll talk about a couple of the questions that are interesting to address, which he's also alluded to. And in particular, I'll talk about how some of these questions can be addressed by looking at linearized gravity and, in fact, computing the Green's function, gravitational Green's function, and particular applications I'd like to apply these calculations to is discussing the shape of black holes, this question of the subleading corrections to Newton's law, and finally this question of whether gravitational coupling becomes strong near the horizon. So this is work to appear in collaboration with Katz, a student at MIT, and Lisa, who, as you know, recently was dealt a setback by gravity, unfortunately. We hope she comes back to get even. in any case, that slowed us down a bit. In the meantime, there have been a couple of other papers that have come out with some very closely related results by Emperon, Horowitz, and Myers, and by Garriga and Tanaka. Okay, so first, the lightning review. Much of this was just said by Raman. I'll say it in a slightly different fashion, but essentially the same. So the basic picture is we are here living on a brain, and that brain is embedded in an anti-de Sitter space. So I've taken the same kind of coordinatization he has. The z-coordinate, well, runs to infinity going down. That's where the horizon is. In a Penrose diagram picture, what we're doing is taking, a constant z slice. That corresponds again to the brain. It looks like an accelerated trajectory. And we cut the rest of ADS space to the right of that off. Say we set z equals 1, which can always be taken. And then we can identify that with a mirror reflected piece of ADS space on the brain's world volume. And then the horizon, again, is down at z equals infinity. So I'm using the standard coordinates, Poincaré coordinatization of anti-de Sitter space, and working in the region where z is bigger than 1 with the brain at z equals 1. Slightly, I think that's slightly different coordinates than, well, I believe Raman was mainly using these y coordinates. Again, the action is the form of the Einstein-Hilbert action in five dimensions, plus a cosmological constant term, and then a Lagrangian describing matter stuck to the brain, us, along with a tension term. And as was just discussed, there's a stability issue. If you look at the brain's trajectory, if you were to cut off a little piece of the brain, it would want to sail on into the horizon of the black hole. So you've got to do something to keep the brain from doing that, from falling in, so to speak, and that something is summarized mathematically by the junction conditions, which match the extrinsic curvature to the stress energy on the brain, in particular the tension. And so basically what is happening is it's the tension that is keeping the brain from falling into the horizon. And so you have a condition relating the tension and the acceleration you need, which is given by the cosmological constant, with a precise number here, which isn't important for the rest of the talk. And that's the one fine-tuning that Raman was just referring to. As he also pointed out, matter is easy to confine to the brain. And in fact, a long list of people, that's probably a very incomplete list, have thought about scenarios like this in the past. And they've always run into the obstacle that it's difficult to see how to confine gravity to the brain. And this was really the very interesting new contribution that Randall and Sundrum proposed that he's just summarized, namely that when you look at the spectrum of gravitational excitations in that geometry, you have an excitation, a zero mode down at zero mass, and then you have a continuum, but this continuum is nearly decoupled because basically the wave functions are pushed down the mountainside and out to infinity almost. So this is the, well, the analog of a Kaluza-Klein spectrum, or maybe it should be called a Randall-Sundrum spectrum. Of course, the hope is that this, well, it certainly does provide a new approach to the hierarchy problem. Whether that all works out remains to be seen. It's a very exciting possibility. It, in essence, geometrizes the hierarchy problem. And also, this scenario, and of course, the other large extra dimension scenarios, raise the possibility that gravity, and perhaps even black holes or other interesting phenomena could actually be observed at some colliders we might imagine in the near future. So there are a number of interesting questions that we could try to address with the basic scenario on hand. And of course, one is, what does cosmology look like? And that's been addressed by these people recently. And well, they have some newer work to appear. And after the dust settles and some confusions are undone, it appears that the cosmology looks at late times like Robertson and Walker. So I won't dwell on that, but another question is, what do black holes look like? So that's one of the things we'd like to address, and a thing that is talked about in the other references I referred to. Finally, a third question bears on the viability of this scenario. If you look at a perturbation in the metric, as Raman discussed, and now I'm going to work in ADS, well, in units where the ADS radius is set to 1, this perturbation, if it just depends on the four-dimensional position, describes the zero mode. And if you look at the curvature, which enters into the action, just by index counting, you see that must have two inverse powers of the metric, two derivatives, and a power of the metric. And so when you stick in a metric of this, or a perturbation of this form, it looks like z squared. So if you look at curvature squared, it's going to go like z to the fourth. Higher powers of the curvature will have higher powers of z. And so, for example, if you have some action with some higher order curvature terms, you would worry that you're running into the need, well, these corrections are blowing up as you approach the horizon at z equals infinity. And in fact, there's a similar question even if you ignore these terms and look at the nonlinear terms in R alone. So what I'll do is perform a linear analysis, sort of a perturbation analysis of gravity, to try to address these questions more concretely. So the basic idea is to add matter to the brain. And to compute the linearized gravitational field due to a matter perturbation on the brain. And this is most conveniently performed by going to Gaussian normal coordinates. So we take, we choose our gauge under diffeomorphisms such that the components of the metric involving the direction normal to the brain are trivialized, in essence, and all of the degrees of freedom lie in the spatial, well, in the four-dimensional component. And so what we'd like to do is solve Einstein's equations for metrics that look like that. And of course, actually solving Einstein's equations in their full glory is somewhat difficult, although there has been this recent success in 2+1 dimensional scenarios. So for now, we'll just linearize Einstein's equations and work perturbatively in the matter perturbation and in the metric perturbation. There's a little bit of real work that has to be done in actually linearizing Einstein's equations in this background. There's some extra gauge fixing, et cetera. I'm not going to get into the details of that, but I'll just tell you what the bottom line is when the dust settles. And the bottom line is, so again, here is the perturbed metric, that this fluctuation solves an equation of the following schematic form, namely the scalar Laplacian. The scalar Laplacian acting on the fluctuation goes like the stress energy. So in order to compute the strength of perturbations in the metric, we just have to invert the scalar Laplacian. Alternatively, you can think of this as solving a, well, you can think of setting up a scalar analog to the Randall-Sundrum scenario where you have scalar-mediated forces that are bound to the brain and give you a four-dimensional, something that will look like a four-dimensional potential on the brain. Okay, so one way or another, you have to find the Green's function for the scalar Laplacian in anti-de Sitter space. Well, how do you do that? Well, there are several standard methods for finding Green's functions. We actually tried all three, and ultimately this seems to be the easiest way of proceeding that, well, for now, it gives a useful answer. So first of all, you Fourier transform the Green's function and work in using the translation invariance in X and work in Z space. And then the Fourier transformed Green's function satisfies an inhomogeneous version of the equation that Raman wrote down in his talk with this potential, the so-called volcano potential, and the delta function that you need to put in because you're looking at a Green's function. Then, of course, you can solve this equation at z not equal to z prime. It's just the homogeneous equation, and you know what the solutions are. There are these a certain combination, Bessel functions times powers of z. So you solve for z less than or equal, less than z prime or z greater than z prime, and then you just have to figure out how to match the solutions together. And I should note at this point that, of course, this whole procedure follows through in higher and lower dimensions as well, but for the rest of the talk, I'm just going to take the dimension to be the physical dimension of 4. Okay, so we have solutions that are arbitrary linear combinations. What are the boundary conditions? Well, the boundary conditions are the following. So here's a picture. You're solving for the Green's function as a function of z due to a source at z prime. And so we have these two homogeneous solutions. And, of course, we want to match them at z equals z prime. And, of course, we want a discontinuity in the derivatives, which is what is responsible for the delta function. When you get the correct normalization, you have a z cubed. And then you have to apply the correct boundary conditions on g less than at the brain, so the brain boundary conditions, like in Raman's talk. And then finally, you have to choose suitable boundary conditions at the horizon. One reasonable set is that there is nothing coming out of the horizon, in other words, Hartle-Hawking boundary conditions, or the analog here. So you solve those boundary conditions, and you find an expression for the Fourier transform that looks like this. The Hankel function is the thing that satisfies the Hartle-Hawking boundary conditions, and this combination of Bessel functions satisfies the brain boundary conditions. So that's the scalar Green's function, or its Fourier transform. And, of course, if you want a static potential, one heuristic way of getting that is just to integrate this over time. which removes one of the integrals over k, and so that is how we will estimate potentials shortly. Okay, so now let's talk about the asymptotics of this and start addressing some of the questions that have arisen. So first of all, you can look at a situation like this where you have one mass on the brain and one mass off in space somewhere, or off in the fifth dimension. And for example, let's take the, this second mass to be very far off in the fifth dimension, and take the transverse separation, the four-dimensional separation, to be small. So this is going to get us at the question of what happens as you go down towards the horizon. And there, actually, if you put one of the masses on the brain, this nasty-looking expression from the previous slide greatly simplifies. It just turns into this. And now you can easily estimate what is going on at large z. At large z, you should, from the oscillatory behavior of this, work at small k. And so you can use the small k, small argument expansion of this Hankel function, together with, we're taking x to be small, so we'll just replace the exponential by 1. So we get an expression of this form, where we replace the Hankel function by 1 over the square root of minus k squared. And so we get this, and then you just scale out the z by rescaling k, and you see that you have a 1 over z squared in the Green's function, or a 1 over z potential as you go off the brain. We'll come back to what that means shortly. First, let's look at some other asymptotics. So another situation you can look at is where the two masses are very close together, say near the brain at z equals 1. And in this case, you're interested in the large k behavior. That's what dominates the integral. And a similar argument involving the large k asymptotics of Bessel functions gives you an expression that goes like the product of the masses over the distance squared, which is the anticipated five-dimensional result if you're at scales much less than the cosmological constant scale. Again, I'm working in units for the moment where that's 1. Another question you can try to address is what happens if you have two masses at, say, equal z, and at large distance as compared to the ADS scale, what kind of potential do you get? And so that's z equals z prime, x minus x prime much bigger than 1. And a similar analysis shows that you get a 1 over r potential, which again is what you anticipated. And you can figure out what the factors are in front. This combination, now I've put the ADS radius back in, is the fundamental Planck mass times RADS, that cubed, and so that's the four-dimensional Planck scale. And there's also this additional factor of 1 over z squared. Gravity gets weaker and weaker as you go further and further from the Planck brain in, say, one of these scenarios with a TEV brain. So that's something you see from the pictures of wave functions in Raman's talk. So we get the anticipated four-dimensional potential with a ratio between the mass of a particle and the effective Planck mass going like 1 over z. Okay, so now I'd like to turn to applications of this scenario. Of these calculations. So okay, so the first application is what is the shape of black holes? Now, of course, we can't find the black hole solution in four dimensions, but you can estimate what its shape will be by considering a point mass on the brain and finding the linearized solution around that mass. So it takes this form, and a rough estimate of where the horizon lies is where the perturbation starts to be of order 1 in the, say, in the H0,0 component, then it can cancel the dt squared coefficient and give the condition for a horizon. So first, let's go out along the brain and change our radius. And again, we saw a standard Newtonian potential. And so we get the standard result from general relativity that the horizon is going to be at a radius of order m, the mass. So that's the, everyone recognizes that formula. Next, let's look at what happens as you go out away from the mass in the z direction. And there, we saw this m over z behavior for the perturbation in the metric. And you want that to be of order 1. But you have to be careful because z is not the proper distance away from the brain. dz over z is the infinitesimal proper distance. So log z is the proper distance. So this falls exponentially in the proper distance as you go away from the brain. And that means that the transverse displacement at which you will find this, you will find the metric perturbation of order 1 varies logarithmically with the mass. So this gives a picture of black holes, which looks something like that, that you have, again, a size of order m along the brain, but a logarithmic size transverse. So it's like a pancake. Actually, Chamberlain, Hawking, and Rial discovered this same condition, or more like guessed it. And for some reason, probably because they didn't do this conversion, they called it a cigar. It's not a cigar, it's a pancake. And this actually was also found in the 2 plus 1 dimensional case by our friends here. This actually raises one interesting possibility, an interesting consequence, which we haven't thought about a lot more, but bulk fields can perform black hole flybys. What would that look like from the four-dimensional perspective? Well, a Kaluza-Klein mode comes along, goes into the black hole, and comes out the other side. So that's rather bizarre. I don't know what other things to conclude from that. But what's that? Gets very light in the sense that I'm not so sure. Well, yeah, good. Okay, good question. Okay, another thing we can discuss is, let me see, I'm supposed to go till 15, oh, okay, I've got plenty of, I'm in good shape. We can discuss subleading corrections to the Newtonian potential, and so what we want to do is look along the brain at large separation x and look at the Green's function. Again, now there's z is equal to 1. Since both points are on the brain. And so our expression simplifies even further. And if you want the large x behavior, you should look at the small k behavior. And so you just have to look at the asymptotics of the Bessel function at small k. And this is very simple, except I completely forgot about this term until Ed's comment just a few minutes ago. And I think that's right. I think there is a log in there from this term in the H1. And so before that, I had a 1 over r squared, but I believe that this actually gives you a log r. I'm not sure. Maybe he will shed more light on why he believes the log r is there later. You can compare the strength of these corrections to those that you get from various other things. For example, if you add higher curvature squared, or curvature, actually that should be cubed, terms to the action, then those give higher powers in R. So this actually with the log looks stronger than what you would get from curvature squared terms, but actually the curvature squared terms in four dimensions are not there. What's that? Oh, yeah. Right. In the standard four-dimensional scenario, there are no 1 over R squared terms. R squared log. Well, okay. No, these terms are here in the Randall syndrome, or in brainification scenario. Oh, okay. Ah, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, okay. But I don't know of motivations for adding a log curvature term. So, okay. Anyway, and then so you have to actually go to higher orders here in order to see corrections, and so this clearly dominates over those higher order terms. You could also look at the post-Newtonian corrections, and those are down by powers of 1 over r, so those are much stronger than this still. Okay, so another thing we can do is look at the nonlinearities and the strong coupling questions. And there are two sources, again, of self-couplings of H we might be wondering about. One is just those that are intrinsic to the gravitational self-coupling in the Einstein-Hilbert action, and then we could also look at the higher curvature couplings. So let's just recall our earlier argument that the metric goes like 1 over z squared, and so for the zero mode, well, actually, let's expand this out. So the curvature goes like g to the minus 2 d squared g. So that goes like z squared, and then we have a d squared h term, actually, plus h d squared h, and so on. And again, for the zero mode only, h goes like constant as a function of z. So we get this behavior we were worried about a few minutes ago, namely r goes like z squared, r squared goes like z to the fourth. But when you look at the behavior of the full field, if you, say, put a source down somewhere and look at how the field is behaving as you go off far away, you have extra falloff in 1 over z, and even stronger extra falloff if you differentiate. It turns out either along the brain or perpendicular to the brain. It's obvious perpendicular to the brain, but it's true also along the brain. And so the curvature, in fact, as you go away from a source, is falling like powers of z, and the square of the curvature is also falling, and so you don't, it doesn't look like there's any trouble now with so-called strong coupling effects. This, of course, is what you would expect intuitively, namely that if you have a localized source here somewhere in ADS, it's going to produce a localized field, not something that is getting strong at the horizon. So the zero mode analysis, if you do it in terms of the zero modes, is somewhat misleading. You really need to include the higher modes to sort of figure this out properly. In this? Yes. Right. Oh, that should be squared. Sorry. The pens are over there. That should be a square. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's from squaring this term. And that term isn't there in R because it's a total derivative. Okay, so just to finish, and I guess this went maybe even a little quicker than I thought. In conclusion, the scenario has passed one viability check. You don't have the solution, at least not obviously, destabilized near the horizon with higher power correct or higher curvature corrections, which is something that was an initial concern. And we've recovered some expected behavior, in addition, at separations small as compared to the ADS radius. We get five-dimensional potentials. At separations large as compared to the ADS radius, we get four-dimensional potentials plus corrections, which we can estimate if we get our Bessel function expansions correct. And then finally, going away from the brain, we can also see the form of the potential, and we can see both that, well, we can ease the concerns of some fundamental inconsistency due to strong coupled gravity, and we can also see what black holes look like, and really they are black pancakes. So obviously this is only scratching the surface. There are a lot of other things one could imagine doing, a lot of other interesting questions in this whole scenario. But I will stop there and leave those for future work. Thanks.